So, what was your favorite subject in school? For how many of you was it history? History? Anybody? Uh-huh. Okay. It's kind of what I figured. So, why do we have history? Or why do we have social studies class? And actually, what do we learn from history? Don't say that. Don't say that. The only thing we learn from history is that we don't learn from history. Yeah, don't say it. Stop saying it. Stop right now. Because are we actually doomed to a cycle of failure? Might we actually be espousing an ideology or maybe even a prophecy here that has reduced history to meaningless and useless verbiage and boring desk work? Let's dismember that cliche and examine it as well and consider on how we should apply our hearts to wisdom. Psalm 90:12 says, "So teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom." The idea there is to teach us to properly value our days. We're asking the Lord, if we pray this psalm, we're asking the Lord to cause us to properly value or weight and give credence to our days, properly value our days, that we may bring the heart to wisdom. It's like something we must apply our hearts to wisdom. We must bring our hearts to wisdom by properly valuing our days. So the implied message of this verse is that we shall learn wisdom from our days, from our history. We shall learn wisdom from our history. So that's the background here for what we want to look at and the following here. Thinking about history now, what is history? What is history? As was already suggested, it's things that happened in the past. But simply put, time-wise, history is the past. Technically speaking, what I'm saying right now is history because it has now been said. What I have said now is history. What has been done is also history. What has been done, a record of past happenings. This thing's not projecting exactly well. Maybe we can make do. What has been done, a record of past happenings. History has a way of shaping us and making us into what we are, and actually into what we are becoming. Soon after I started teaching school, I remember hearing this quote somewhere, and it really stuck with me. I am what I have been becoming. You can say that today. You can say that tomorrow. You have said that yesterday, perhaps. But we are the result of our history. We are what we have been becoming. And what we are becoming now is what we will be. And so it is a progression there. History does have a way of shaping us. In other words, I'm arguing for the idea that we do actually learn from history. We do actually learn from history. Whether we're cognitively aware of it or not, we are the product of our history. We become what we have been becoming. Someone has said, history repeats itself because no one was listening the first time. History repeats itself. And some of us that have been around the block a few more times than others maybe are more aware of this than others, that there are cycles in history. We see the wheels of history turning. We see it in cycles. And we see the repetition of history. Indeed, as Solomon said, there is nothing new under the sun. It seems like that's almost true almost all the time. History repeats itself because no one was listening the first time. Ian Tenner said, "History is a priceless treasury of sleeping wisdom." The priceless treasury of sleeping wisdom, waiting to be understood. And think about it. If we can learn from history, if we can gain wisdom from history, can gain wisdom from past events, we really ought to be the most enlightened and wisest people that have ever lived on the face of the earth, because we have more history to learn from than anyone else has ever had. Okay? we really ought to be the most enlightened and wisest if we could learn from history. Now, what is history more specifically? And this is from a list that I received from Jonas Sauter, looking at history in a school setting might include accounts of peoples, nations, empires, civilizations, and rulers, and their rise and fall and achievements, their legacy, what they left behind and what their influence was on their empires and their nations, etc. Discoveries and inventions and how they influence the course of history. Examples might be navigation and transportation methods, tools, vehicles, and weaponry and its effects on warfare. Think about how things have changed over the years, even in this regard. Medicine and the treatment of disease. We think of political and cultural ideologies and their effect on mankind. You think of Marxism, imperialism, communism, liberal democracies, capitalism, socialism, industrialism, globalism, all these isms. You can study history and gain wisdom from all those isms and their effect on mankind. The life and cultural practices of common people over time. Nomads and shepherds, artisans, serfs, peons, city dwellers, and how they interacted with their environment and how things worked for them. And then, of course, religious practices of peoples and cultures. And certainly the history of God's people from creation to the call of Abraham to the formation of Israel and then finally to the church age. Those are important facets of history that we need to incorporate into our learning and gaining wisdom from them. So we conclude then that if we don't learn from history, it may be for one of three reasons, or one or more of three reasons. First of all, perhaps it's because we don't actually know history. You can't learn from something that you don't know. If you don't know history, you're not going to be able to learn from history. And perhaps it's that we don't understand history. And by understanding, we're talking about the hows and the whys. Why did these things happen? And having an understanding or a concept of why these things happened and what were their causes and effects. Perhaps we don't understand history as one reason for not learning it. Perhaps we've just gone through the books and the curriculum and just gotten the basic facts, but we don't have an understanding. So maybe that's why we don't learn from history. And finally, perhaps it's because we don't gain the wisdom that history has to offer us, and that is that applied knowledge and understanding. Okay, that is not our subject, however, but we're just thinking about history as we can learn from the events of history. So now that we have history, what is wisdom? And what mental picture do you get when you think of wisdom? What comes to your mind? What mental picture flashes into your mind when we say wisdom? Tell me, what comes to your mind? Pardon? An owl, yes. I gave you a clue up here on that one. An owl, the wise old owl. Okay, what are some other pictures that come to your mind when you think of wisdom? Older person with white hair, graying hair, yes, gray hairs, okay, all right, wisdom. What are some other pictures you might get? Do any of you ever picture a woman? Okay, actually in Proverbs, wisdom is pictured more in a female form than it is in the male form. So if you study it, wisdom hath built her house. She hath hewn out her seven pillars. She standeth on the high points of the city and calls out, come ye hither, come and eat and drink and feast at my table. It is she, right? Perhaps you've never considered wisdom in the picture of a tomato, but we'll get there soon. Who is a wise man? Who is a wise man among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. With this verse, we get the idea that wisdom is related to good conduct. Let him show his works with meekness of wisdom. Wisdom is related to good conduct. We're not necessarily attempting to define wisdom here, because wisdom is that elusive quality that we actually have to apply, and we have to, it has to be personal. And but these are some aspects of wisdom here. Out of James 3:13, wisdom is obvious. It is obvious. Let him show out of his good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. It is demonstrable. He shall show his works. And then wisdom is meek, his works with the meekness of wisdom. So wisdom, the aspect that we want to think about here is teachable. Will we learn from applying wisdom to history, or picking up on the wisdom of history? Wisdom is the right use of knowledge, someone has said. It's the right use of knowledge. Wisdom is sound judgment and right action. Wisdom is understanding what you know and don't know. Wisdom is the highest prize of education. It would be nice if we could give a diploma called, this student has completed 8 years, 10 years, or 12 years of school and now has acquired wisdom, wouldn't it? It would be so nice. Wise students and exiting our schools with diplomas in their hands, a diploma for wisdom. It is the highest prize of education. Let's be sure that we're attempting toward wisdom. Now, we've said that it is knowledge properly applied, and I would say further, wisdom is knowledge and understanding applied practically and profitably. Knowledge and understanding applied practically and profitably. And here we go to the example of the tomato. Now, a tomato is a fruit. How many of you knew that a tomato was a fruit? Yep, sure. Okay, you knew a tomato was a fruit. Okay. That's knowledge, okay? You knew that. That's knowledge. You know a tomato is a fruit. That's knowledge. That's the what. That's the fact. That is knowledge. Now, understanding is, why is a tomato a fruit? Or how come? Like they would say in the South, how come a tomato is a fruit? You know? How does that work? And why? Well, a fruit, technically or botanically speaking, is a ripened flower ovary, and it contains seeds. Okay, does a tomato vine blossom? Does it have flowers? Yes, it does. Okay, does it have a ripened ovary? Yes, it is, and it grows out. And do tomatoes have seeds? Yes, they do. So it is technically or botanically speaking a fruit. Right, so that's an understanding. Now wisdom with this knowledge and understanding was understand that there's many appropriate uses of tomatoes, like pizza sauce and a good tomato sandwich for those of us that like that. But you don't put this fruit in a fruit salad, okay? It's not a, you don't make fruit salad out of tomatoes, although it is a fruit. So it is a profitable and practical application of the knowledge and understanding. Take that for what it's worth, but that's what we're wanting to emphasize here, is that knowledge and understanding applied profitably and practically is wisdom. The Bible says wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get it. Proverbs 4:7. Wisdom is too high for a fool. Now, fools are lazy, carnal. Wisdom is too complex and difficult, too much work for a fool. Mark Twain said, most people don't write well because they don't think well, because as soon as they start thinking, they get a Charlie horse in their head. That would be the definition of a fool. A fool doesn't think on this level. It is too high for a fool. Wisdom is better than strength. Yes, it's okay for these young men in your schools to be, in your homes to be concerned with being strong, agile, athletic, powerful, and to admire strength and that kind of thing. But oh, we must teach them. They must understand that wisdom is better than strength. It is better than strength. Being wise is better than being strong. Wisdom is profitable to direct, Ecclesiastes 10:10. Wisdom is better than rubies and anything that could even be compared to it, financially or monetarily or materially. Wisdom is better. And then, of course, James 3:17, wisdom is from above and is first pure, then peaceable, etc. And then especially easy to be entreated, teachable. See, wisdom is more practical and everyday than it is abstract and philosophical. We get the idea sometimes that maybe wisdom is just attainable for those that think hard, or those that work hard to get it, or have a higher education, or that kind of that it's a philosophy and it's abstract, hard to reach, hard to get. Well, I would like to contend that wisdom is more practical and everyday than it is abstract and philosophical. It is an everyday thing. Wisdom makes the lessons learned from past events congruent to current events. By congruent, we're talking about how they correspond in character and kind. We can lay them along. Wisdom allows us to lay current events alongside past events, and we can learn from them and see how things compare. And we learn wisdom from making the comparison. We can learn from history. Wise people, this is an anonymous saying, wise people learn from other people's errors. We don't have to make the same mistakes as other people to learn from them. We can learn, if we're wise, we can learn from their mistakes. Intelligent people learn from their own mistakes, and fools never learn. George Santayana said, when experience is not retained, infancy is perpetual. Infancy is perpetual if experience is not retained. Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. So now we've been trying to lay the foundation for what is history, that we can and do learn from history. Now we've looked at what is wisdom, how we can gain it and get it. Now, bringing the two together, how do we gain wisdom from past events? Excuse me. First of all, is by a thorough knowledge and understanding of past events. We cannot gain wisdom from what we don't know and understand. This is why and how we should have history class. This is why we do need history in our class, in our schools. It's a history I've found in visiting schools and working with schools over the past number of years is something that is easily pushed back. It's easily pushed back. Yeah, we do need to concentrate on the three R's. We do need to concentrate and really push forward with other subjects as well. But let's not unnecessarily push history back out of the way, because it is not a nuisance. It is something that we should learn from history. And this is how and why we should teach history. It involves analysis and then synthesis. When we teach history with knowledge and understanding, when we teach it with both, it should involve analysis and then synthesis. By analysis, we're talking about taking apart all the different parts of the story and examining them, all the different parts of an event, looking at the components of that event, looking at the ideas that spawned the event. And then synthesis is helping the students and the teacher cooperating with the students, bringing it together to form a new whole, to form new ideas, and to cement things into their minds. Cyrus McCormick, we'll use him. Cyrus McCormick was born in 1809 in Rockbridge County, Virginia. At 22 years old, he has the distinction of developing and manufacturing the first American reaper. Okay, the first American grain reaper at 22 years old, right? The final outcome is the International Harvester Company, which is today the Case International Company, and all these large combines. Okay, so now you've given the students some history. You've given them some knowledge and perhaps a little bit of understanding, because we need to now figure out what happened in this story. So we think about this. What kind of man was Cyrus McCormick? What inspired him? What brought him to this point? Well, labor was so intensive. For harvesting wheat, especially in the hill country of Virginia where he was, harvesting wheat was a very, very difficult job. And it was hard to find people and labor that could do it and do it well. And so his father, Cyrus's father, had in mind that there should be a mechanical way of harvesting wheat. Somehow you should be able to harvest grain with some kind of machine. But he started working on it. He worked on it for a number of years. He always failed. Cyrus's father was a failure in that regard. Cyrus, at age 22, asked for his father's keys to his father's shop. And he went in and decided he's going to try to take up his father's project. And he is determined to make this work. He did. He did. At age 22, he got a patent for his first machine and took it out in the fields. And it says that he was reserved. He was a reserved person, determined, serious-minded, and he spent all his time in his father's workshop. His elder father had failed in his attempt. Cyrus took out a patent in 1834, but he was mostly interested in preserving his family's heritage and his family's business. So how did he do that? He actually did salvage his family's business and his family's legacy for being manufacturers of quality machinery and things like that by developing this machine. And the outcome today is the International Harvester Company, these great big combines now that do all these things. These machines today are built on the same principles that Cyrus McCormick implemented back in the early 1800s. When his patent was beginning to be duplicated and others were taking over and he wasn't able to retain the sole patent for this kind of machine, the sickle bar and the reel type machinery, then others started making it, and he was determined, well, if I'm going to survive, then I need to outsell everybody else, okay? It's not that I'm the only one making them anymore, so now we need to outsell everyone. So he thought through strategies on how to sell. He took orders in and stuffed them in his pocket, order for them, stuffed them in his pocket, and he traveled the circuit out through the Midwest, especially because he actually moved to Chicago to make it work from Chicago on to the West. Then he had a devastating loss after he had sold a lot of reapers. He had a devastating loss in the Great Fire of Chicago, but he was resilient. He came back and recovered from that, and today he goes down in history as a man with a great fortune because he used his head, used it wisely. He was determined and resilient in the face of failure in a number of different ways. Now we've given you the components of the story, all right? You could have discussion on these various aspects of the story. What kind of man was he? What can we learn from this? What kind of character qualities did he have that we can emulate or that you can do? And why was he successful? And then they can piece it back together, and they may be thinking things like, to all work, there is a profit. CSL man diligent in his business, he shall stand before kings and not before mean men. And other proverbs and things like that, you can make the application through the story of Cyrus McCormick, as well as other events of history. What we're talking about is analysis, taking apart the story, looking at the different components, and then saying, what can we learn from it? Piecing it back together, having students come up with their own conclusions, cementing it in our minds. By three, Confucius, an ancient Chinese philosopher, said, by three methods we may learn wisdom. And what I want to look at is first by reflection. Again, this is how we gain wisdom from events in history, is by reflection. It does take time to think. It takes time and energy to think. And that's how he says we learn best. It is the noblest way of learning wisdom. Number three is by the elder thoughtfully telling the younger. This is one of the burdens that I have as I consider the older generation passing off the scene, younger generation coming on. Are we frankly and ably telling our stories? Do we tell our stories? Does the younger generation have the advantage of knowing their history by me? I have a history. You have a history. Our children need to know our history, your history. Do you ever think about it, for those of us my age or even a little younger, that our children don't know anything except that there always were microwave ovens? Cell phones, and various things like that. There is tremendous history. There's a tremendous amount of history and developments in our lifetimes. We must tell, we must teach and say these stories. As teachers in our schools, in our homeschools, and in our families, we must tell. Tell it as a lesson. Teach it as in all teachable opportunities. Students learn to know history through their studies, that is, the what of history, and then understand it somewhat by the how and the why. But it's up to the teachers to help them to apply it. Teachers should apply it. You might ask questions, well, what might that look like today? Or you might say, what can we learn from this event? What were some of the mistakes that they made? What were the consequences of those ideas? What were the outcomes? Does that outcome still hold true today? If that idea is spawned and acted on, does it still act out today in the same way? Do we make the same mistakes? How can we avoid making the same mistakes that they did? Now, what did they do right? Why, and what ways were they successful? How can we apply this today? Remember, though, that thinking is hard work. Remember, though, that thinking is hard work, but we shall call our students, our children, to the hard things. Apply wisdom. We shall call them to the hard things. Think about these things. That's the point of this particular section here. Make good use of resources. First of all, pray. Prayer is your resource for gaining wisdom from past events. You can pray. God has promised that he that asks with a noble and faithful heart will receive wisdom. Your life and character is a resource. It speaks wisdom to your students. Your wisdom can be conveyed to your students by your life, conduct, and character. We'll move on here. Books. Yes, books. Books are one of the resources we shall not neglect in bringing wisdom into perspective, wisdom from the past into perspective. I think of C.L. Lee's eighth grade social studies new textbook, The Changing Frontiers. You read through that, you can gain a lot of wisdom if you stop to think about those things. And they give you some help even in these perspective boxes in some of those courses, some of those chapters. The perspectives boxes, they do some of the thinking for you even and get you started thinking that way. A lot of wisdom can be learned. I think of even other books such as Dr. Ben Carson's book, Take the Risk, where he teaches how to make decisions, hard decisions, and make them wisely and well. The Martyr's Mirror might be a resource for much wisdom. You see what wisdom looked like in their age and in their challenges. Christopher Dock, the story of Christopher Dock. We have the books over here for sale. Christopher Dock was a pioneer schoolmaster in early Pennsylvania. And his story, we can learn that, his wisdom from reading those things. Read the Proverbs. Read the Proverbs, implement them in your school. Use them for your devotionals and with your students. Use the Proverbs. It would be some of the ideas. I would enjoy getting some ideas from you too, but we're running out of time, so we're gonna move on here. And then projects and activities. Do projects, do activities to replay or reinvent the setting of the event so that you can imagine properly and imagine well. Do projects. Do simulations. Just use the imagination and try to feel how they felt. Try to shape the events and characters. You might even do some activities like dialogue type activities or perhaps little action plays or things like that to help them to get the idea and what happens with them. That is how we gain wisdom from past events. And finally, in this vein, use older people. Go to older people. It would not hurt a bit to take your students to older people and ask them questions, ask them specific questions about their early life and learn from their wisdom, learn from their experience. Yes, there is wisdom often in the gray hairs or with the gray hairs. There is that wisdom. I think of my father-in-law, who we buried only 2 weeks ago. I think of him. And is his wisdom buried with him? Has he passed his wisdom on? Are we going to learn from his wisdom? I think of how he had many regrets about some actions that he took early in his ministry. And he was involved in orchestrating a church split. And how he doesn't recommend it at all. He advises against it. And he says he made a big mistake. He taught wisdom there. Will we listen? Will we hear? Will we gain that wisdom from our older people? What do we learn from history? Don't say it, okay? We learn much from history, okay? Don't say we don't learn anything from history, because we do. We are actually shaped by our history. How do we learn from history? We've just gone over some of those things. Closing now, 1 Corinthians 10:11, talking about the story of God's people as recorded in the Old Testament specifically. All those things, as recorded in the whole Old Testament, happen unto them for our examples, for our learning. And they are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. We are in the final age. What everything that has happened in the past has been recorded for our learning. Shall we learn? What should be then result? Wherefore, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. The next page, just very quickly here on your handout, you have some quotes, and you can think of some life experiences. This is just an optional activity you could do sometime. I point you to number 6. Point you to number 6. And how many of you know who the author of this quote was? Who said these words? Okay, I'll keep you wondering. You can ask me when we're finished. God bless you.